Now, from these three pronouns, you expand to the four quadrants. Why did we have to go from three to four? I'm with you with three. Why did we need
why,
four?
Why did we go to four? Because we charge by the quadrants.
Oh, is that where it goes?
So this is our first move on the way to a 12-quadrant model, which sort of renders the word quadrant, not too helpful, so that means four. If you look at the it domain, a third person, like the others, also has a singular and a plural form. And so there's he, she, it, they, them, its, plural. And even though both of those are sort of objective things out there, there's a whole lot of work done on why systems or holistic gatherings of its can't be reduced to singular it. And so a kind of systems theory approach, so to speak, reminds us that collectives, groups, systems of its operate a little bit differently than individual its. And it's really a parallel between I and we, for example. I is singular and we is plural. And there's a very close parallel between an it and an its, a system of its. So we tend to use that. The four quadrants are just a reminder that probably all four of those are what we ought to include, and not just three. Although we all often talk about, the big three, because those kind of cover the essentials. But you get a little extra definition on your map if you use its. Now, again, we could include she and they, and then, we could have literally, they're subjective and objective pronouns. First person subjective is I, objective is me. Plural is we, objective is us. So we were talking about earlier about what you want on a map is just how much stuff to make it useful, but not too much to make it clunky. So after sort of looking at all of these things and how they appear in different cultures and what philosophers and scientists have made out of them, we settle on three or four. And the three are I, we, and it, and the four are I, we, it, and its. And if we do that, then we sort of draw a little thing we call the four quadrant map. And in one of the squares in the upper left is I, and the objective form of that is an it, the outside, inside and outside. And then in the lower left is we, and the lower right is its, plural. So I, we, it, and its. And that sort of just gives us a little bit more granularity in what to discuss. It's important because there's a huge, and has been for centuries, East and West, huge, huge arguments about the relation of a single object and systems of objects. And it's a whole argument between systems theory and empiricism and all these boring philosophical debates. But ones that we figure we have to cover, so we throw that in.
Now, what is the basic argument you're pointing to here?
The tendency, particularly for male adolescent analytic minds, is sort of to divide everything down into smallest units. And so when you get into the problems with reductionism, which means somebody wants to take their favorite quadrant or their favorite approach and say it's the only real approach, and everybody else is fundamentally deluded. And one of the first things that happens, particularly because science itself is so powerful, science dealing with the its and objective truth, is so powerful that the first thing science does, usually does sort of two things, but the first is it gets rid of I and we. So it claims that there really are no interior domains that can't be reduced to objects and its. So morals, art, beauty, all that stuff gets trashed very quickly, and you get scientific materialism, a sort of flatland world that basically is nothing but frisky dirt, if you look at it. It's sort of their view of what's real. It's a very compelling vision because objective truth is very relatively easy to get at. It holds still. Rocks don't jump around. You don't have to interpret rocks. They're good enough to not sort of talk back. And so most science deals with those things that you don't have to get into a discussion with. So it looks at anything objectively, ecosystems, trees, rocks, mountains, planets, stars, big bangs, all that kind of stuff can be dealt with because they're all its and they're all explained in it language. There's not an I or a we in the lot of that stuff. So it's easier to do on the one hand, but for just that reason, it's extremely powerful and effective. It can indeed plop a person on the moon. So the first thing science does, and you have to be real careful about, is it doesn't just say, I will investigate an it. It says, I and we don't exist. All those interiors don't exist. They're just fantasy, illusions, get rid of them. And all those interior things include things like God and spirit and creativity and love and compassion and art and morals and all those things can all be reduced to atoms scurrying through neuronal synapses and explained in terms of serotonin and dopamine and all that. We're not saying serotonin and dopamine and all of that doesn't exist. We're saying it can't explain those other domains. So you have, again, this is what an integral approach says. No, you can't reduce art and morals to science. Those are the big three, and you have to keep them, you have to honor all of those. But once science gets rid of art and morals, it then takes its second, and that's sort of gross kind of reductionism. It then looks even at complex systems like ecosystems, and it tries to break, an ecosystem is still an object, it's still out there. It's part of the it, objective it domain. And it tries to deny that systems exist and say that only particulars exist, so only atoms exist. And that's the ultimate sort of scientific reductionism. And so that approach is denying that even systems of its, holistic processes, exist, and there's nothing but atomistic little separate things clunking around on their own. It's the ultimate reductionistic move, and it's still the official sanctioned philosophy of most science. And so you find, you know, even the great scientists today want to reduce all of sociology and psychology and all that down to sort of the selfish gene and, you know, Darwinian selection, sociobiology. And then they want to reduce that all the way down to nothing but the interaction of atoms according to the laws of physics.
Now, this phrase flatland that you use, yeah, is this your own word for this, or is this from some other source? There's no interior animation, so it's flat. Is that why?
Yeah, it was a semi-famous book brought out several decades ago, actually kind of it became a little bit of a cult classic. And it was just called Flatland. And it was about, it was actually a mathematical treatise that was attempting to explain certain aspects of mathematics, and actually very cleverly. So if you take a sphere, for example, and you have a sheet of paper, and if you were living on the sheet of paper and the sphere passed through you, all you'd see is circles, because that's what a sphere looks like on a flatland. So it was a whole treatise about how flatlanders couldn't actually see these other dimensions, because when they passed through their little flat world, it just, all they could see is little parts of it. And everybody immediately resonated with that, even though it was about mathematics, because it sort of explained what so often happens when you have one approach, no matter how useful it is, that's narrow. And so whatever comes their way, they look at it through the same narrow lens, and they see the same sort of flatland stuff. Abraham Maslow said, if the only tool you have is a hammer, everything starts to look like a nail. And that's the same kind of approach. So I just sort of borrowed the term flatland to mean a little bit more specific, which is taking any of these great interior domains of the I and the we in subconscious, self-conscious, superconscious, pre-personal, personal, transpersonal domains, spiritual domains, all of those things get reduced to flatland objects, its, ultimately atoms. It's just a preposterous notion, but it's very, very prevalent. So we include its plural to represent the great systems theorists that are still scientists. They still believe in nothing but objective things, but they point out the processes, collective systems are just as important as individual it. And most of the really important sort of like ecology and so on really can't be explained by reference to just an organism or just a molecule. You really have to look at systems of interaction. Now, they leave out the interiors too, but at least they don't reduce it all to nothing but atoms. And the whole point about this is that all of those are correct. I mean, you want to bring all of those to the table.
I know when I've tried to explain to people just a little bit about your work, I always start with the four quadrants.
With that, yeah.
And it seems like that's actually quite a lot for people to get their mind around. And before we even get into levels and lines and
more mind-damaging things.
So just sticking for a moment with the four quadrants, can you give some examples of why it's useful to understand these four quadrants in terms of just going about your life?
Sure. If you want to be a writer and write about a philosophy, you can use it there and make money. No.
Okay.
People go to a spiritual teacher, and they obviously want to, in some sense, improve themselves or awaken, enlighten, have more awareness. One of the things that you sort of look at is, I mean, other words for I, we, and it could just be I, we, and world, for that matter. And if what they're doing in this endeavor is just emphasizing the I dimension, then sooner or later, they're probably going to start to find an imbalance in the we and the it. So if all you're kind of doing is just sort of processing your own consciousness and your own awareness, you might find that your interpersonal relations are suffering because you're not giving enough attention to those. You might find the spiritual approach doesn't actually deal with how do you actually deal with the objective facts of life. What do you do about the job, the car, the rent, and so on? And how does it deal with interpersonal relationships? What are you really doing when you meditate? I mean, are you really increasing your sensitivity and compassion for others? Are you getting more self-withdrawn? So even on something like that, you can kind of do a little bit of a check and see, okay, what actually is going on here in terms of what domains are being involved, which ones are important, which ones aren't. A lot of people in the world of business, for example, are used to looking at the running of business, and they're used to following the it domain or its very carefully. So they want to know the balance sheet, they want to know what salary is, they want to know workers' hours. And there's a whole system of business management, total quality management, based on making the its have a lot of quality. But the problem is there's I and we involved in the business. And a lot of people aren't very good at the interpersonal we. And so their business falls apart because they're not giving attention to that domain. A lot of recent business practices have dealt with looking at the I. Emotional intelligence, for example, isn't about whether you're spit polishing your product, but do you have emotional intelligence when you're interacting with the world? So that's looking at the I domain. Those are just sort of those kinds of examples. What you want to do is sort of check in with all these dimensions in yourself to make sure that you're not shortchanging them, because the idea is that those dimensions are there anyway, and they're acting anyway. So if you're not giving attention to them, they're going to start sabotaging you. They're going to be acting anyway, but you're not taking them into account. So again, you have a map. You're trying to fly over the Rocky Mountains with a map that's not very comprehensive, and you're very likely to crash. You're just going to not really know your way around very well. So one of the things that we do is by introducing I, we, and it first, is in whenever we go on to any other component, you mentioned levels and lines, states of consciousness and all of that, the reminder is each of these things can be looked at from an I, we, or it perspective. And so it's just a little reminder that even if you're getting into sort of things that look like they're merely interior, they really have repercussions in the external world. And you really need to take all of that into account. We is a four quadrant map, and we'll go into something like business, if there's business consulting problems. And almost immediately people can learn to say, okay, we thought the problem was in this one quadrant, having to do with its, but the quadrant's really we, it's this other quadrant, because there's an internal culture clash of values between these different groups of people, and that's where our real problem is. We thought it was the assembly line, it's not. It's the we value. And so there's actually dozens of business consulting firms that now use that simple overview, because people immediately get that there are these different dimensions and that problems in any one of them can impact all of them. And so those kinds of things, it's a brief reminder, but it can turn out to be really, really important.